Okay, welcome everybody to the second interview-based Wireless Watch podcast. My name is Alex Davis, and joining me is Fabian from Once.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Cheers. Thanks for being one of the early adopters. Yeah, we last spoke at Mobile Congress, and I've been using a tidbit that I got from you as an example to harass operators with. So we'll get to that, I promise. But for those who don't know you and Once, Fabian, can you give us an introduction, please?
Of course. So I'll start with Once. Once is the by now fastest growing cellular IoT company in the world. What we do is we provide a software platform that connects products wherever they are in the world. And for that, we use a lot of software tools, but also what most people know us for today is cellular connectivity, basically the same that goes into your smartphone. We have now 173 countries in which we offer our coverage and make it as easy as possible to connect and manage these connected devices for our customers. My personal role is head of global product strategy, meaning I mostly take care of our value proposition expansion and all of the go-to-market topics as well to ensure that the stuff we build is actually valuable to our customers and will be used in the future by them, and makes it again easier to build these connected products.
Yeah. So the sort of role really is provide the connectivity and management sort of suite, and people use SIM cards. Is eSIM around yet? I can't quite remember off the top of my head.
Yes, it depends on which eSIM you mean, because there's two definitions out there, but we support both. So eSIM for some people means the MFF2 form factor, like embedded SIM that we have, of course. And the other one is EUICC, meaning that you get to change your operator profiles remotely, and we also have support for that, also combined.
Yeah, and as a sort of IoT MVNO, there's a lot of history to unpack, right? The mobile network operators at one point thought that every single IoT device in the whole wide world was theirs for the taking. And I think they discovered just how difficult that journey was. So now the IoT MVNOs, and there's quite a lot of them, are the ones that are sort of driving volumes, right? So yeah, how was your view of that transition from the inside? Like, what did that journey look like?
MNOs, they suffer a lot from IT cost and IT legacy cost. And this is where the IoT MVNOs start to shine. That includes us, of course, because we started building our own infrastructure. The entire IT system is our own, and it's all optimized for IoT and mostly constrained devices that Once focuses on. But of course, our network is powerful enough to also power the high data devices as well. But the operators, the MNOs, they have to focus on voice, on SMS and consumer traffic, not so much machine traffic, which really is a different game. And the MNOs also have been out there for decades. And the stuff that has been built back then, they still have to support until today for a large degree. And I think what you've been referring to in the intro, the IT cost alone for an MNO on average is around $4 to $5 per device per year. And for us, it's about 40 to 50 cents, depending, of course, on the usage and stuff like that. But it really is a difference. And that all comes down to us building our own IT infrastructure.
Editor's note. Fabian meant 14 to 15 cents here, not 40 to 50. Yeah, that example was really useful to sort of challenge operators with, because if you take that difference, right, and then go, well, there's sort of, I think Ericsson now says there's about 8 billion SIM cards, right? It's this enormous amount of money. And it's just in one example, like in one piece of the IT, the OT stack, that there's however many tens of billions available, you know, per year to save on. And that was, I mean, I came out of Mobile Congress quite, I'd sort of radicalized myself is how I sort of jokingly said. I'd gone in fairly cynical, and I'd become quite disillusioned. And I think, yeah, the sort of difference in scale, right, between the MNO, which is looking at a $30-$40 ARPU per month and can go, well, I can stomach those IT costs, versus, yeah, the IoT guys who are hoping to do tens, hundreds of millions of devices, right? That, I mean, that's always just a big old tension. But I also remember, I think you were starting work on this, but Once is interested in doing more than just the connectivity stuff, right? There's the OS, which isn't actually an operating system, but yeah, Once OS, right? Like, how's that going? What is it for people who don't know?
So it started out as an operating system, but not an operating system for the device, as a lot of technical folks would assume. But it did start out as an operating system for the IoT, you can say, because in a way it provides developers software tools to, again, build and manage these connected products easier. And by now we have extended this set of software tools that we have built on our own. And now OS does not stand for operating system anymore, but for open system, because we are now allowing third-party companies from the IoT software space to channel their software, their services through Once OS, through our software services, to our customers. And we have now 18,000 customers, and they have very high requirements. And of course, they trust us that we are not recommending other software companies who do stuff they would not like. So we have been doing a lot of due diligence to make sure that the technical pre-integration works really well. So for example, we have a Mender, which provide firmware over the software services. We have other companies to provide data visualization tools, and it's all built on our platform, technically integrated, so that there's as little friction as possible, as it could possibly be there. And this is what we've just launched, and of course, we are looking to add more plugins, as we call them, in the future.
Yeah. And I've been covering the Internet of Things since sort of 2014, right? And there was this definite burst in interest in like IoT platform. And the value there was joining up all of those disparate dots and tools to sort of make it work together. And yeah, I think there was a lot of acquisition and investment activity, and I can't really think of many that are sort of still around, right? So what's in terms of like the customer journey, right? They come to Once looking for connectivity. So how do you move them into looking at things like Once OS? Like, do you find that they're quite aware of that need, or is this just a sort of low stakes value added, or is it sort of mission critical for some of them?
That's a very good question. The answer to this is that a lot of customers, once they have decided that they need cellular connectivity, they mostly have built their software stack already. So for them, the Once OS offering is not as important at the beginning. But our customers, the vast majority of them, grow and produce not only one model of their connected product portfolio, but multiple. So the next model they are about to build, then they think about it and build it into their software architecture from the get-go. And then they immediately see how fast it is and how quick it makes them, and that also they spare all of the maintenance and operation costs later down the road. So that's all provided by us and our partners. So we have seen companies who build complete connected products within 6 weeks from prototype going to production, like the first real production devices coming out of the line. So I find that personally very impressive after a lot of productions I've seen before. And it's really picking up. So the usage is growing. It's going really, really fast right now. The other one that I would like to talk about is the topic about IoT platforms. I think what has happened to them, we now see within the AI space as well. There are a lot of attempts of providing that big holistic AI platform, just as companies and vendors from IoT did 5 or 6 years back then, right? And the reality really is that most of them have failed, right? There's really difficult with this one catch all or one vendor to catch them all sort of approach, because it's not the reality of the customers. They pay for 100 features, of which they only use 10 at max. Mm. And then if they need one that is not in that platform and they ask the vendor to develop it, yes, they will, but then they make it available to all other, to all of the other customers as well. And this is, I feel, where they don't really feel valued all the time. So we went the other way and said, okay, we follow the modular approach. Yes, these tools are somewhat or are very compatible with another. It's somewhat of the Unix approach, like it's the Unix approach, do one thing very well and be compatible with the others. This is what we do. And OneSOS, actually, we don't charge for it. It's included in our lifetime flats subscription. So we feel it's just the right thing to do. A lot of other companies, they charge everything for every bit and every piece of data that they have, and we don't do that. Everything that we have, we just give out. So our COO, Ivo Rook, at some point, he made the description of, we are the Robin Hood of IoT. First we took from the operators and gave to the developers, and now we are taking from the SaaS companies as well and give to the developers again.
Yeah. And I mean, sort of on that point, right, the Deutsche Telekom and SoftBank investment is kind of how Once has secured like favorable roaming agreements, right? And I remember at Mobile Congress, I was saying, well, if the only way to get the IoT prices this low is via an equity deal, you know, is that sustainable? And you were sort of saying, well, no, I think it is. I don't think this is bad for the market, right? But the story there, how did that come about? Because Once was a spin out from Deutsche Telekom, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is correct. But Deutsche Telekom is not a majority shareholder. Mm. So still our founder is the majority shareholder, Alex Sator. And since then, a couple of other operators, such as SoftBank, they have acquired shares as well. So they got equity and we got access to their network in return. Yeah. So this is quite the clever model, because then you get out of that, hey, are we somewhat as an MVO are allowed to use their networks or not? Because they are in, they are part of the company. They are also owners. So they have an intrinsic interest in us growing. And this is quite different from all of the other MVNOs, or the vast majority of them, because they need to purchase their roaming agreements or their connectivity. They are always dependent from them, and we are not. So this is a very, very good argument also for our customers, why they should trust us, because it's very, very likely that we are still here and for years to come.
Yeah, and the sort of landscape of trying to manage all of those roaming agreements, like that's already fairly fraught. And then I think if you throw in the 3G sunsetting, 2G sunsetting that's occurring, and also operators having a very sort of unpredictable approach to whether they've deployed Cat M or Cat NB, there's a definite value, right, in going with somebody who's got this sort of network. So how many devices are under management now? I can't quite remember.
So we now have 22 million devices under management all over the world. I think this is also very important to highlight that we are not just a European company or not just an Asian company. We now have our headquarters worldwide. Europe, of course, US, of course, Japan, together with SoftBank, is a very strong market. All of the rest of APAC, we are now conquering as well from our HQ in Singapore. And what we have just announced is our market entry in Brazil. Mm. We are one of only four fully authorized and legally authorized MVNOs who may operate in Brazil. And this is very, very unique, because Brazil is a very self-contained market, very difficult to enter, lot of tax issues, legal issues, import issues, and so on. And we have solved all of that. So our companies or our customers who also have a customer base in Brazil or want to operate there and couldn't because it was just too complicated, it's just the same Once promise as we give to all our other companies and customers as well, it's very, very simple. You get a SIM from us, which is specialized to operate in Brazil. You can just put it into your device, ship it there, and go. That's it.
Yeah. And that was quite a lot of work, right? Setting up the Brazilian, it's a subsidiary, right? It's a full-blown, yeah, it's an independent wing in some manner, right?
For once, this was the biggest and most complicated project to date. It took almost 2 years. So you could argue it was as difficult as setting up the company and getting it to where it is today.
Yeah.
We are 6 years old. And it was difficult for sure. And we needed to set up a legal entity in Brazil, but this is not so uncommon for us. We do that in lots of different countries because it makes it easier for our global customer base to get their invoices correctly, to declare taxes easier, and so on and so forth. So I have to look it up. I think by now we have 6 or maybe even 7 legal entities all over the world.
Yeah. And the, like, I guess, why Brazil? Like, obviously, very big company, very big market. But like, how many were you finding you had global customers that were saying, oh, we'd really like to be able to use this system inside Brazil? Could you please go and investigate it? Or was it push or pull, really?
It was both, I'd say.
Yeah.
So our entire product strategy is based on building what our customers really need. And Brazil was requested quite a lot before. But of course, our market analysts, it's obvious. It's a large country. It's a large market. You have different operators, different MNOs there. The coverage is not always 100%. So you need all three of them in the best case to really give out the best product. And we decided at some point that this is exactly what we need to do. Have to also, I think, understand we are very valuable for customers who deploy into more than one country. In fact, three quarters of our customer base do deploy in at least 2 countries,
okay.
Which is quite a lot. And many of them even deploy into 10 or more. So whenever our customers have a requirement where they have to deploy into wherever in the world, once is the natural choice. And when these companies had to deploy into Brazil, we were just out because we were not allowed to do permanent roaming there. So the devices, of course, they work for a couple of days, but if you have an asset tracker or any smart meter installation, which stay in the country for a very long time, then it was really just not an option. And that we changed, and our customers are very happy about that. And it's not only companies outside Brazil who can now deploy into Brazil, but since we have the legal entity, also companies from inside Brazil can now do the same and also deploy into the rest of the world, which is also quite the benefit for them.
Yeah. Which was the operator in Brazil then that provided the coverage?
So we support Claro, TIM, and Vivo.
Okay. Yeah.
We have been authorized on the back of Claro, but we have support for the other two as well.
Yeah. Gotcha. And because this is a sort of fresh example, what's the conversation like between you as the MVNO and the MNO? Are they still kind of hopeful that this is business that they should be able to deal? Do you think generally operators view the Internet of Things as, you know, was it a hype cycle that's burned itself out? Is it this thing that's still 10 years away and therefore they can, you know, they can wait, there's no rush to get to it? How does an operator typically sort of view that sort of discussion?
MNOs struggle to monetize IoT. So they are aware of the sheer volume that exists. You just have to look at China, for example. But they can't really figure out on how to sell it and how to make money off it. Because quite frankly, IoT is not always simple. You have multiple parts to put together, and the hardware needs to work with the connectivity and the cloud, and everything must be harmonized. And selling that is difficult than selling just a single SIM card, right? To a consumer, for example, as well. So you really have to sell it differently. You have to distribute it differently because you need to become part of the supply chain of the customer or the company who's building connected products. And then you also have the high IT cost that we talked about. And for us, it's always, we say, if you pay more than $1 a year for your connectivity, you're paying too much. And this is the environment in which MNOs struggle to monetize. So they have a very high interest in leveraging this market, but they just couldn't know how. So the company structure that we talked about before with the equity and shareholders, this is what is way more interesting for them, because what they can do best, of course, is to provide radio access. And we can do all of the rest. We can do the supply chain insertion. We can do the IT, keeping the IT costs low. And we also know how to sell to customers worldwide, whether it's via our digital channel on once.com, where people can just use it themselves without having to talk to anybody, or even through our direct sales. Like if you are in a enterprise and you need some more of accommodation and a little bit of more back and forth, then this is also something that we support. And yeah, I think this is way, way more suitable for IoT projects that I've seen out there.
And sort of a point on definitions as well, because something else that was touched on Mobile Congress was you'd launched a sort of I think it was flat pricing, right? But it was a per gigabyte, 5 euros per gigabyte flat pricing. And for a lot of the early Internet of Things discussions, the use cases were things that, you know, it was more like sending the equivalent of one SMS per whatever day, week, month. It was very low throughputs, so that you could get very long battery lives. But obviously there's a need in the IoT for high throughput. So yeah, what does the device footprint look like on the Once network? Like how many, do you have a lot of smart meters? Are there actually quite a lot of these high bandwidth applications?
Previously, we've been focusing on low data devices, and you could also argue constrained devices, often battery powered, from all verticals you could think of. I think our strongest verticals are logistics, are utilities, smart cities, smart connected products. It's really, really diverse. What we have found is that a lot of companies, let's say they have five products in their portfolio, four of them are low power, and they connected them with us already, and they were really, really happy. And now they wanted to unify their supply chain and only have one vendor for all of their connectivity needs. But up until this point, they couldn't do this for their fifth high data device. And this is why we said, okay, we now offer in a Once way a high data product that offers a unified price, which is €5 or $5 per gigabyte globally. And this is what made it really, really interesting for them, because now they have the same supplier, same straightforward pricing, although it's a little different from our prepaid model that we have in the low data segment, where you pay €10 or $10 upfront prepaid and you get service for 10 years. Of course, this doesn't work with high data. So with high data, we went with a pay-as-you-go model. So we measure basically how much gigabytes your devices are consuming, and then we multiply that by €5 or $5, and that everywhere in the world in 173 countries.
Yeah, and in a kind of related fashion then. So how conscious is Once of the network protocol that is being used to join the network? Are you pulling your hair out because of Cat NB, Cat M, or is there a, everything's Cat 1 bis now anyway, it doesn't matter too much? Is there an agnosticism, or are you sort of deeply aware of like how these products are being connected?
We are monitoring the usage and the growth in the different regions, of course. I would say there's still a lot of 2G applications out there. A majority of them use 4G, especially for the high data use cases. Cat M is something that is going strong, and of course narrowband IoT as well. It's somewhat spread out. Just 3G is something that is lacking behind, I would say. We are monitoring the situation, and of course, whatever the operators give us that makes sense for our customer base as well, we hand out as well.
Yeah, and do you know if the because I in the UK, right, BT put out a press release not very long ago saying, yeah, we added Cat NB, and I mean that was release 14, right? And we're coming up on release 18 now, 5G standalone, and that just feels like such a long time to have added this. So I don't know how many customer conversations, how many leads, you know, disappear when they find out that the low power devices that actually getting global coverage was difficult. Do you find that happens, or is there enough? Are there enough options, right, inside what you can kind of collate as the MVNO?
There is more than enough opportunities. Okay. This is also why we do not focus, for example, on ultra low latency 5G projects, right? Where you see advertisements where someone in Dubai is doing a surgery in Los Angeles, for example.
Yeah.
This looks good on TV, yeah. But it's not the reality of our customer base. No. And at least not the vast majority. So if there's one, it might slip through the cracks, and then we accept that. We try to offer a mass compatible product that is simple to use and easy to consume.
Yeah. So these days, if a customer comes in and says, right, my business case means that I have to use Cat NB, is there enough Cat NB out there, or you know, same question for Cat M?
So with NB and Cat M, it is there. We have that in our portfolio. Of course, not every operator in the world supports it, and therefore, since we are still dependent on the local availability of our roaming partners, we can't do much if one particular country of an exotic ones don't have that. So while this is true, if the case is high enough, for example, and if there's like a good reason and we see that this is applicable to other customers as well, of course we try to cater to this and try to fulfill these wishes, but then it's just a little bit more of a case-by-case basis, I'd say.
Yeah, okay. And perhaps as a final little question, are you seeing much interest in RedCap yet? Whether it's RedCap or eRedCap? I mean, eRedCap's a bit pretty standard, but are you finding that customers are already looking at that as an option?
At trade shows, I do. Not okay. So much in real customer requests.
Gotcha. Yeah. But I mean, for MVNO, the arrival of RedCap is, you know, it's of interest, right? But it doesn't really change. Doesn't change the sort of commercial realities too much, right?
Yeah, let's see how it develops. It's a little early probably to tell that. I don't expect too big of a change, to be honest, but let's see when the time's there.
See it ramping up. Cool. Right. Thanks very much, Fabian. Yeah. Where can people find you? What's the best way to get in touch?
Once.com, easiest way. Of course, me personally on LinkedIn. That should be very easy. I think that's it.
Excellent. Yeah, sweet. Right. Well, thank you. That's it from Once. If you want to be on one of these podcasts, get in touch with us at Rethink Technology Research. And if you like this, subscribe. You'll get the weekly news in your feed. That way, when we look at our recent Wireless Watch coverage. And until the next time, I'll see you then. Take care. Thanks again, Fabian.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Lovely. Cheers.